We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
From Learfield, this is the Chirpcast with Joel Godet, your source for everything Ball State athletics. Now, here is your host, the voice of the Cardinals, Joel Godet.
All right, welcome back into the podcast, everyone. It is another edition of Chirpcast, and today a subset of the Chirpcast podcast. We will now bring you semi-regular conversations with our athletic director, Beth Goetz. We'll aim for a monthly window, although I don't want to say we'll do it monthly and then miss a month, so don't hold me to that. But they will be semi-regular conversations to check in with Beth Goetz about what is going on in and around Ball State athletics. Our first one is fairly appropriate to what's going on in college athletics right now. It is the NCAA tournament, and more specifically, the women's basketball NCAA tournament. That's down in San Antonio in the controlled environment, or in and around San Antonio. It's stretched up to Austin, Texas, and UTSA, and a couple other places in and around the greater San Antonio area. But Beth Goetz has been down in Texas since the start, or since before the start, of the women's basketball tournament. She'll be there for 28 days, all told, coming back home after the Women's National Championship the first week of April, or I guess second week of April. Does this count? This is the first week of April? So the second, next week. She'll be back next week after the National Championship game. Beth is part of the NCAA Women's Basketball Committee, or more commonly known, the Selection Committee. She's one of 10 people on that committee that met to choose the teams, the 64 teams that partook or are currently partaking in the women's basketball tournament. For what it's worth, the other people on that committee, from Duke, Nina King is the senior deputy athletic director. Danae Barricato is the deputy athletic director at Northwestern. Rhonda Bennett is the senior associate athletics director in the SWA at Nevada. Greg Burke is the director of athletics at Northwestern State. Kurt McGuffin is the director of athletics at UT Martin. Lisa Peterson is the deputy AD at Oregon. Dorita Ratcliffe Dawkins is the deputy AD at Arkansas. Debbie Richardson's the senior associate commissioner at the Atlantic 10. And Jill Shields is the deputy AD at Kansas State. Jill actually joined the committee at the same time as Beth. They were both added prior to last season. It's a five-year term, so last season, I guess, was kind of a dry run. They got to be on the committee, but didn't actually get to go through selecting the teams for the tournament. This year, Beth was able to participate in selecting the teams for a pandemic-controlled environment tournament. Next year, in year three, she'll actually get to go through the process of what I guess would normally be a completely normal selection process, where you've got to deal with regions and flying teams and geographic matchups and all of that in addition as well. But thought this would be a good time to sit down with Beth to talk a little bit about, one, her time in the controlled environment, the bubble, if you will, down in Texas, and what that experience has been like, but also to give people an inside look at the selection process, to take you literally inside the room, what those conversations are like, how it's hashed out, which teams make the field of 64, and then also the work that goes into it. Like, I've been in Hawaii last year, 2019 at this point, for the Diamond Head Classic when the men's team played in Hawaii. Like, I've been in Hawaii and seen Beth sitting there watching a game on her phone. She is literally in paradise watching probably an Atlantic 10 women's basketball game. Like, you have to watch so many games and be so in tune with so many teams. It is an unbelievable time commitment that Beth gives you a really good insight into during this conversation. So on our first of our now semi-regular check-ins with Ball State's athletic director Beth Goetz, let's dive into what it's like being down in the controlled environment and what it's like to get there, the process of selecting the women's basketball field of 64.
I guess I would say it's just really regimented, you know. So the thing that I keep saying is it feels a little bit like you're back on the camp circuit, you know, when you were coaching. And so you got a lot of structure to your day and where you need to be and what you need to do, what your responsibilities are. And of course there's the added layer of needing to stay in the controlled environment. So your movement is really restricted. So it's been interesting, but you know, you're in with a bunch of people you enjoy being around and really excited about what you get to do while you're here. So that, you know, that part, you know, makes the other just seem like something you got to go through to get to the games.
This is a silly question, but like you're in a controlled environment, you're in a hotel. What do you do outside of work and go to the games? And like, just from a basic human standpoint, like, what do you eat? Like, how does that work? 'Cause you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, that is true. So I had these grand ideas for some reason. I've got a whole checklist of obviously work projects in addition to day-to-day that I thought I was going to be able to get done. And then I believe it or not, I brought a couple books because I thought, well, you know, usually every moment of free time I've had has been consumed with watching basketball games. So recorded games, all those things. And so I thought I was going to do that. So all of those things are promptly packed in the same bag I brought them because there hasn't been that kind of time. So there just isn't as much downtime as it seems. Now this last week might be a little bit different because you don't have the number of practices and shoot arounds going on because you just don't have that many teams left. So yeah, you don't have a lot of time. And when we do get a few minutes, you know, I like to run. I cannot do that. We are not allowed to do that outdoors. But we do have access now. We didn't the whole time, but to the workout room. So you can get a little bit of time in on the treadmill. So, and in terms of food, I actually think the hotel's done a really good job. So if you're working here, if you're at the hotel during mealtime, you can go pick up a boxed, whatever, breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And if you are at the arena doing shoot arounds or at a game, then you're served food there, which is pre-boxed as well. So the other thing we've all gotten good at is you can do you know, delivery from any restaurant you wanted. So our committee calls them family meals. So we'll have a family meal so often, which means we get it, you know, some Uber Eats driver drops off something that's a little bit tastier for us. But we also, I've done Whole Foods delivery and You know, you can order from Target. So,
okay. So it's, yeah. So it's basically like a stay at home order.
We've been well taken care of on the food front for sure.
What is your actual role in terms of tournament execution? Because obviously you're there because you're on the committee that selects the field. So to the layman, you would be like, all right, the field is selected. Your job is done. Why is it not done? What has followed after that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because I don't know exactly what this would feel like in a typical year. But here we've played a relatively hands-on role in game operations to some extent, particularly in the early rounds. So we had site assignments, and while you're there, whether you're escorting teams different places, lots of facilitating questions and those types of things from ops directors and coaches, who's getting the right pins and so that they can get onto the court, or to the camera people have the right armband on, and do they know where they can sit from a COVID standpoint, calling the cleaning crew because they got 10 minutes between practices and they've got to make sure that they've, you know, fogged all the equipment. So there's been a little bit of that. Now that we're closer to the time running down, we've got some great site reps and other ops directors that handle that. And so you know, you're more dealing with the big picture operations. And so if there's an issue that requires the committee to weigh in or provide some guidance, but we always have somebody that's a committee member represented at practice to address questions and concerns and those types of things. I'm not on we're all on different committees within the big committee. And so some of us, I'm not on the officials committee, but those folks have a different role in talking with the evaluators after each game. I'm on the sportsmanship committee. So if we have any of those types of issues or concerns or any violations that could come up from somebody that veered outside the controlled environment, those would come to our committee, all those types of things we would deal with.
Okay, so now the hard questions. I'm sure you as a person that helped assemble the bracket, look at it as the tournament goes on. And like, I have to imagine to some degree, you're like, hey, did we get this right? Or like, ooh, this matchup is interesting. Or like, ooh, I thought this would happen this way. Or like, oh, this is validating because this played out the way we thought it might. We're recording this in between the Elite Eight days. So with the six remaining teams you have, how do you feel as the tournament has played out about how you guys wound up putting this thing together?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I hadn't really thought so much about if we were right or not. I think you want to get the best teams in the bracket that you can, and obviously see them in the best ability. And in this particular year, you know, the data we had and the criteria we used was just not as robust as it is in a normal year. But, you know, I think we feel like it turned out really well, and there's been some just incredible games. And I think like anybody else this time of year, upsets are fun. So at least for me personally, there's no, you know, pride in saying, hey, look, you wanted all your seeds to hold exactly the way they are. I think it's what makes it exciting. And, you know, there's really been some just incredible games to watch down the stretch here. And it's been a lot of fun to see them compete. These teams you've been watching all year on TV, which just doesn't do it justice to get to feel a little bit of the energy being right there on the floor with them and watch them compete. And as we all know, this time of year, it's just the joy of watching a team celebrate and the agony of those that have to, you know, say this is the end of our season.
And it's weird in this environment too, because your season ends and like, yeah, normally you just go home from a normal road trip. But like, I feel like now you're getting like voted off the island. So it's just a little bit different. I want to get to the nitty gritty, like physically how you, like what it was like to go through this all, but give me the lead up to it as well, because I think people don't understand the amount of work you have had to do over the last year, and really 2 years, and didn't even get to do anything with the information you gleaned last year. How much scouting goes into and how much work goes into just arriving to the committee room for you over the course of a basketball season?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, not going through it in a typical way, but I've been on, I was on the women's soccer committee before, and obviously I've heard others that have been on sports committees. And I do think, particularly in basketball, where, you know, you are watching so many games, that that really a lot of the work is done before you show up at the tournament, short of the actual selection few days that you're doing that. But that's really where the time goes in. So, you know, you're watching a lot of games. You know, you engage, we have a conference monitoring program. And so you're engaging with conference offices, and you've got regional rankings committees, that you're listening into. And those are the coaches that weigh in and would rank the teams in their region. And so, it's certainly a time consuming, you know, process. And so I don't think until you go through it the first year, even this year, I felt a little bit more comfortable and how to organize your team. I mean, your time, how to really organize your time and when you're going to watch those games. And so it gets to, you know, hey, can I put one on while I'm getting ready in the morning? So I've knocked one out before I even walk out the door. You know, cause we're watching all of our home and away events for our own institutions as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of logistics there. And I think a lot of it is, you know, trying to figure out how to best organize the opportunities that you have to make sure you're fulfilling all your responsibilities at the same time.
Ballpark number. How many games do you think you had to watch?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably watching somewhere between, you know, somewhere around 50, 60 games, you know, a month.
I really expected that to be total. And then the month figure really threw me for a loop. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, those may not all be complete games, but, you know, particularly at the end, we have assigned conferences that we're, you know, primary and secondary responsibilities on. And then you've also got to watch those that, you know, are going to be, you know, your top four seed lines as well. So you really are going to watch a lot of games. And so you may catch bits and pieces of them. And the committee members do a great job of saying, hey, look, in my league, these are the key games that you need to watch. And so it's not unusual that you're going to watch in three games at once. And so, you know, we're not creating the scout for the next game. So you may not be watching with that level of attention, but you got one on your iPad, one on your phone, and one on the TV. So.
But okay. So it's interesting. So like you guys are good teammates of each other as well. So like you would say to somebody from, I don't know, West Coast Conference, who's got the Mac, I don't know, I'm just making this up. Like you would be like, hey, you should watch Buffalo Central play tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, there's those that you don't, you know, the top 10 matchup we all know about, and we're not spending those, but I think it's really helpful to watch some of those teams that, you know, one, are really good in their league. So it's going to, you know, if they win it, if they get the AQ, you're going to have an understanding where they should fit. And then, you know, some of those that might be on, you know, on a more of a bubble team. So, you know, you think about some of our last four in, and I can think back about committee members saying, hey, you know, you might want to put eyes on this game and watch them. So yeah, it's really helpful.
Cause let's talk about the process. I like the reading about what I could find, like I feel like Votorama is probably a good descriptor of it. And then like there was a quote that said from NCAA.com, the committee will cast hundreds of ballots and engage in debate. So like, okay, that seems like a lot. Walk me through the physical process of casting hundreds of ballots, what those ballots are for, and kind of how that whittling down happens.
Yeah, so it's a really meticulous process, which I think is important. So it's not that, you know, everybody walks in, you got this ranking and you kind of leave it on the board. There's a process that allows you to check and double check. And so really teams don't go in without being checked above and below who they are alongside. And then there's opportunities to reconsider. And then the debate is really important. I think, you know, I encourage anybody that hasn't done it to take an opportunity to go through mock selections. it's, you know, the NCAA started off in that opportunity. I don't know, maybe it might've been almost 10 years ago now. I can't remember when they started that process, but people can participate in a mock selection process. They actually go through it. They give you brackets and they, you know, they start to walk you through exactly how it works. So, you know, I think as you're putting teams in consideration, there's a really clean protocol about how many votes you need to even be under consideration. And then once you're under consideration, there's so many votes it takes to put you in to into the bracket. And then you're sort of on this consideration board. If you don't get enough votes, you might get moved back into the in consideration. You can come back again. And so that's really where it comes into play. And I'm telling you, there's such a fine line between many of these teams. So we've got selection criteria, and you look at all of those criteria, which you know, those are everything from your win-loss record to your net score to, you know, your how you're playing now, you know, in your last 10 games and the whole list of criteria that we use. And it's just really, really hard. You know, if somebody wants to take whatever the top seed and compare them to the last seed in the tournament, you could probably easily see the separation there. But it was just much more difficult than I thought. And that's why the conversation to really try and understand and go through a team, because you really will have the same discussion multiple times, just to make sure, you know, you want to get it right. You want the integrity of the tournament to be, you know, to be the best it can be. And so it's a really thorough process.
When do you know you're done? So like, if you've got, here's your field, here's your under consideration. You take a vote. All right, now here's our field. Who's now under consideration? All right, now take a vote. All right, now here's our field. Who's now under when do you get off the hamster wheel of moving teams around and back and forth? And kind of what is the, I don't know, like what is there a metric cutoff to say like, okay, this is the field. We're done with whoever's under consideration.
Well, there's a vote for that, Joel.
Okay.
There's another ballot for that. Well, at some point, I mean, and as you're working through the process, you know, it'll start to take form, but there is a point at which, you know, you get to a place where you're going to be, you feel like you have it done. And then they say, okay, you got to sleep on it. You got to think about it. You got to go over it. And you might be doing that on your own to come back and say, hey, does everybody comfortable? So there will be sort of a final adoption of the bracket.
Is there a cutoff though too? Like if you're under consideration and after X number of votes you haven't moved into the bracket, like okay, now you're no longer under consideration. Like how does that work?
And I'm not an expert on their process, and somebody in the room is on the NCAA staff is great at saying, at constantly reminding us like what you can and can't do, and this is what the protocol calls for. So they'll sort of remind you, but there's nothing you can't fix. So it's not like if you went all the way through and we're like, oh my goodness, we forgot Ball State, right? And if Ball State should have been in the bracket, there's a way.
There was a thought, you definitely had that thought, I'm sure.
And I tried to say, hey, listen, we forgot our Cardinals, but there is always, you can't, the only thing is they kept telling me I couldn't talk about my own team. So, but yes, there's always a way for something to be reconsidered. Now it's not just one person has to do that. You'd have to ask for reconsideration and you need people to agree something should be reconsidered. So, but they really, you know, the process, I think, in terms of trying to ensure that you can account for human error or, you know, just additional information or thought, I think is pretty thorough.
What metric does the layman think is really important that is not important at all? Like, is there something that we're all like, they like, you need to have this, but you guys like, yeah, that didn't really, no.
That's a really good question. The only one I can think of, well, one that comes to mind is that, you know, you'll whether it's on social or whatever, but what somebody did a year ago doesn't matter.
How hard is that to do though? Because like there has to be like some sort of bias in your mind of like, yeah, but they're really good. Like, how do you remove that from the equation?
Yeah, but you'd be talking about what they did this year and teams change. So, I mean, yes, you might be thinking about the storied history of a program and, you know, you've had that, you know, in a women's bracket dozens of times and you certainly had it, you know, we had that this year and you had on the men's side this year, a couple storied programs that didn't make the bracket. So, you know, I think you just have to remember that this is, you're looking at the body of work. That's what gets you into a tournament, the body of work for the current season. Now you do, once you get into bracketing in terms of regional assignments, which as I understand it was so much easier this year than when you're really worried about sending people across the country. There are also protocols about, you know, you do try not to match somebody up against somebody they played in the previous year.
Right.
But generally speaking, that might be one of them that you know, at least I've heard it of just the, you know, well, the program has done X. And that's true. It doesn't take anything away from them. It's just not part of the criteria.
Do you ever do a blind like comparison? Is that ever something that happens just to, so you're not looking at it and being like, well, East Slingshot State, you know, like I they're good. And, or like their metrics look a certain way when you put it under their name versus when you take the name away.
No, I can't say they've done that since I've been on the committee.
Okay.
Although there is a point, you know, when you're at way too much caffeine and not enough sleep that you may not be sure whose name's at the top of the, top of the chart. But yeah, you know what, there's so many data points. I think that's a valid, you know, valid question. Is there a way to do that? But you're going to be tied to, you know, you got your conference, you know, you got a conference strength of schedule. So you're going to know which league team you're talking about and it matters who you play. That's how the net scores work. And so I think it's interesting, probably an interesting way to evaluate it after. I don't know if you could actually use that tool in the room.
You don't have to answer this as far as like particular team name, but like just in your mind, if I said, what was the toughest decision that you had to make? Can you immediately think of it?
Yeah, pretty close. I was asked this actually, there was on something else they asked us to speak with, and it's not even just so much a team, but I it's actually parts of the bracket that are really hard. So there was really the middle of the bracket gets to be like this when you get to like the 5, 6, 7 line. I mean, you really have a lot of teams that I felt like were really close. And then, you know, the last four in and the last four teams in and the next four, you do not want to mess that up. I mean, that's the difference between being the last one in and the first one out is, you know, 28 days in the controlled environment. So it's you know, in a lifetime experience for those kids. And so you just agonize, you know, as you get down to that point. So it really does become pretty difficult to do. And nobody takes any of those. I mean, you don't take any of the decisions lightly. Even we have a practice round early in the year, which basically is teaching you how to use this system, reminding you how to use the computer system. And even when you know it's like a practice round, somebody's running you through to show you how to vote and how to pull all the information on the computer they give you. I mean, you're immediately like sweating and you can feel this anxiety and they're like 2 minutes because they're trying to, you know, they're trying to talk to you about process, not about what team's in the bracket. And you're like, no, I got to get this right.
I forgot UConn.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like attacks, right? There's always somebody that submits a thing and they're like, how'd you forget so-and-so? And you're thinking, I don't know.
How does this compare? You mentioned being on other sport committees. How does this all compare to having been on a soccer committee, or Karen Lee was on the volleyball committee.
Yeah. I mean, if I were comparing, you know, soccer, which is the one that I've been on, there's a couple of differences. And it's been a little while since I've been on soccer. So I guess I don't know for sure what they do today, but you're not watching as many games.
Right.
I mean, that's not a component, at you least when I was on.
Yeah. Physically, but they're not available. Yeah.
They're not available yet. Like they are. So that's not a component. So you don't have that.
Is that harder because you can't, like, you haven't seen necessarily the teams play in the Northeast Conference the way you can just go flip on ESPN Plus today?
Yeah, I think it would be because you're just your familiarity, and whether or not you're a basketball expert, I mean, and they want diversity on the committee, right? So we have some folks that are basketball coaches, played basketball, and obviously I don't fall into either one of those categories. So your job isn't to evaluate exactly those types of things and what type of defense somebody is playing. But there is a value, I think, to really getting to know teams so that you can speak to them in the room. And so how are they playing at the beginning of the year versus at the end of the year? What that momentum looks like and those types of things. So you really do get extremely familiar with the teams, and that part's been a benefit for sure. The other thing I would say too, before I forget about it, is you don't seed every team in every sport. So, and men's, women's basketball, you seed all the way through, right? So it's a seeded bracket, and that's not how it works in some of the other sports. So like in soccer, we only seeded the top 16 teams. And then basically have regional matchups and those types of things. And so just a little bit of a more in-depth process in that sense.
As I said, probably it's a little bit easier that way because kind of chips just fall into places in those other sports based on regional matchups, things like that.
Right.
Beth, I guess we'll leave it there on that note, but these will be semi-regular going forward, but we won't have another one before April 6th comes up. So I do just want to get your thoughts real quick on looking forward to One Ball State Day and what that means and what that can mean for Ball State and for Ball State athletics.
Yeah. You know, it's this is our third year, if I'm not correct. And just a credit to the foundation staff for putting it together. But, you know, what that day really means, and we certainly understand there's a fundraising component, but it's really about engagement. So it's just one day when all of us that are so passionate about Ball State can come together and share in that pride, whether that's posting things on social media and making a donation or creating a challenge for your favorite department or college on campus. And it's just an incredible moment to see how many people it connects. And for in year three to be as far along in this process as Ball State is, has been amazing. So you're getting connections from all over the country, all over the world, and people that chime in on that day. And so, you know, one of the things I always tell our my colleagues across campus is it's one of those days for me that reminds me and really makes it feel like we're all on the same team, our whole team, you know, alongside of the College of Communication and Student Affairs and everybody else. We all get to celebrate together. And so that's just a lot of fun. And so we're really excited. We hope everybody will engage and participate and show their love, not only for Ball State athletics, for the college they were in on campus and everything else they're passionate about. But we're looking forward to another fun and exciting day.
And just make sure that we make more noise than theater and dance.
Exactly. And what a incredible rivalry, as long as we win.
Like, no one saw that one coming, but that's where we're at. It's athletics and theater and dance, just head to head on One Ball State.
Those are two pretty talented groups of students on our campus. So proud that we get to engage with them.
All right, before we depart for this episode, a follow-up on One Ball State Day. More information on that is available online at oneballstate.bsu.edu. That does come your way April 6th next week. Yes, it's fundraising, like, at the end of the day. But there's more to it. And if you go to that website, you'll find out kind of what makes it more interesting or intriguing. There's all sorts of games is not the right word, but the ways to make it more interesting. Athletic training program match. So this like one of the things you can learn by heading to oneballstate.bsu.edu. Athletic training program match. Glenn Snow, thank you very much, will match gifts made to the athletic training excellence funds up to a total of $500. So if you give to the athletic training program, which directly impacts athletics, there's more money in addition to what you give coming into athletics in that way. Honors College, the dean will match gifts. Elementary education, any gift made to the Elementary Education Fund will be matched by Tom Murphy. Thank you very much for a total of up to 15 grand that'll benefit future educators. So there's all these different challenges. So head online, check out what is around Ball State Day, and beyond the fundraising, and Beth did a great job in pointing this out as well, it's just about being one Ball State on that day. What's fun about it is, like, you just scroll through Twitter and you'll see hashtags, post a picture, like, what do I remember most about Ball State? Share memories of Ball State, talk about Ball State, post pictures of Ball State. It's kind of just a way to flood the ecosystem with Ball State on One Ball State Day. So do in any way you can. If that's financial, awesome. If it's not, still awesome. Partake in One Ball State Day. Tell somebody about Ball State. Wear a shirt to work if you can get away with, like, wearing a t-shirt to work that says Ball State, or if you've got a pull, like, whatever you do, involve yourself in Ball State. Wear a Ball State scarf that day. I don't know. I'm just thinking of ideas. I'm not great in that area. But that's coming up on April 6th. OneBallState.bsu.edu has all the information. If you're an alum, check in with your team, too, because sometimes specific teams have specific activities that they're involved with for One Ball State Day. That'll do it for us here on this episode of the Chirpcast, though, and our semi-regular check-ins with Athletic Director Beth Goetz. If you enjoyed this one going forward, look out for the next one, and you can find me online. You can find me in email. You can find me on Twitter, wherever. You can find us on Twitter, at Ball State Sports. You can hit me up. My email address is on the athletic department directory. Let me know if you have questions or topics that you want us to hit on in our upcoming conversations with Beth as well. Until next time, my name is Joel Gaudette. So long.
This has been the Chirpcast with Joel Gaudette. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.